20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers Nation? Happy Victory Friday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today. It is a Victory Friday. What a massive win for your Green Bay Packers on Thursday. Made it a wonderful Thanksgiving. Hope you guys had a wonderful, safe, and happy holiday. I know I did. That was one of those games. I tell you guys all the time, regular season games, I'm pretty even keeled. I'm not yelling at my TV. I'm not getting up and down and cheering too much. If you were to watch me, I'd be pretty boring. It would just be, you know, kind of watching the game, taking some notes, etc. Not this one. This one had a playoff feel to it, had that big fight feel like we talked about. I was amped up for this one. I was geeking out over every big play. I was nervous. The heart rate was out of control. This was an awesome game. It's as good as football gets. Thursday football, Thanksgiving in Detroit, two really good teams going at it. We'll talk in just a moment how razor thin the margins were in this one, but a huge victory again for your Green Bay Packers. 31-24, putting them at 3-0 in the division. They do go to 8-3-1 on the season, which is still second in the NFC North, sixth in the NFC. They don't move there, but there's that opportunity for that to move depending on what happens in that Bears-Eagles game today. We'll talk a lot about that as well. This was also one where I kind of got done with the game. I did the rewatch and I had some notes already and I'm like, oh, this is going to be relatively simple. And then I kept going through things and looking at more stats and looking at some of the analytics and going back to some of the tape on stuff. And I just had notes upon notes upon notes. So like I said, we have a ton to dig into in this one. Before we get there, I want to shout out our brand new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube members, VMan21, Kyle Williams, Packer Peter, and Brent. Thank you guys so much for signing up. Appreciate it a ton. If you haven't looked at those memberships yet, today is a great day to do so. Also, we would love, love, love with all of your support. If you would like, subscribe, comment, give those 5-star reviews. That stuff helps the channel a ton. If you would do that, that'd be ever so kind of you. But more than anything, thank you again so much for being here. Let's get to our key takeaways from this game first. Number one, I've got six of them. Usually I've got one or two. I've got six of them today. Number one, Jordan freaking Love. 18 of 30, 234 yards, 7.8 yard average, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions, a 95.0 QBR, not quarterback rating, QBR from ESPN, 95.0. That is insanely high. A 124.2 quarterback rating. He was unbelievable in this game. Came out a little shaky, right? Had the play to Bo Melton for what probably would have been a touchdown. Missed him. And really, an odd miss because he had the ability to kind of loft that up there and put some air under it. There was nobody anywhere near him and underthrew it. Bummer there. And then came back on the next play. Looked like he missed Christian Watson on a crosser. And then basically from that point forward just said, I'm going to pretty much play a perfect game from here on out. I mean, deep down the field to Christian Watson, his best deep ball of the year. You know, the clutch play, the throw to Dontavian Wicks, which is an unbelievable play by Wicks, which we'll talk about from his point of view as well. But that throw is an absurd throw. Just to even think that you can get it in there on a key fourth down and then throw it to the end zone there. Unbelievable. Unbelievable play there. The fourth down throw to Romeo Doubs for the touchdown. The fourth down throw at the end to Dontavian Wicks. Really completed the third down throw to Watson the play before. Watson's got to come up with that one. He was just on one. There's that clip of him staring at Wicks after a huge third down pickup, and he's got like the crazy eyes, and I tweeted out, I'm like, that's when I knew. That's when I knew that Jordan wasn't going to lose this game. And I wanted to tweet that out. You can thank me, by the way. I wanted to tweet that out so bad of like, Jordan's got that look in his eye. And this was even a little bit later in the game of like, he's not going to let this team lose. He's going to get a victory for this team. And I tell you guys all the time, I really don't believe in jinxes. That was one where even I'm like, I'm not jinxing anything in this game, but he had that look to him. It had that feel. And Jordan has been so clutch all season long. And I love the decision. We'll talk about this with Matt LaFleur as well. I love the decision at the end to say, you're getting two chances, Jordan. I know some people said, hey, on third down, why don't you run the football first, run that clock? you know, take 40 seconds off the clock, 45 seconds off the clock, you know, depending on how long the play takes, and then go for it on fourth. We have said all season long, why are you not putting it in the hands of your quarterback? Why are you not putting it in the hands of the guy that you're making your franchise guy and paying all the money to? Let him cook. And in the final stages of this game, really throughout the game, but in the final stages, final third down and fourth down with the game on the line, opportunity to put it on ice, they said, Jordan, go get us the win. And Matt said that in his postgame presser as well. He's like, we got two plays here. Go win it for us. Just needed to complete one of them. And he did. And really, he should have completed both, right? Or at least the first one, then not needing the second one. But that's a good play on third down where Watson just has to come up with that. It's good defense, but Watson's got to come up with that. And it's probably better defense on the fourth down. And one of the things I talked about in the live postgame show is I love how Jordan, throughout the course of a game, is going to give his receivers opportunities to make plays. It doesn't have to be the perfect, you know, separation. It doesn't have to be the, hey, guess what? You're going to get a chance to go up and get the ball. And he did that multiple times in this game. And when it mattered most, he gave that opportunity to Dontavian Wicks. And Wicks came up with a massive, massive catch. So huge, huge game from Jordan Love. And their star on offense came through. Guess what? My number two takeaway, their star on defense came through as well. Micah Parsons. Holy hell. 2.5 sacks, all it seemed like at complete clutch moments, a tackle for loss, and just an overall all-star performance, a 38.5% pressure rate, the highest he's had in a game since his rookie season. He was out of his mind good. I tweeted out a play too. He beat, for one of those sacks, Taylor Decker on the outside. I'm watching that play, and I watch a ton of this stuff. And I'm watching that play and I see what he's doing and I'm like, oh, he's setting him up to go inside. And as soon as I think he's going inside, he does this crazy sidestep and swipes the hands with his hands are, we're talking about somebody that's living in the Matrix and has got Neo type moves. It's just like, it's bullet speed or whatever they called that thing in the Matrix movie. Like his hands are so fast. His step is so fast. And I'm thinking he's going inside and all of a sudden he's around the outside of one of the better left tackles in football and at Jared Goff for the sack. I mean, it's transformer type stuff. It's mutant type stuff. It's unbelievable. And then the play that I tweeted out actually wasn't even that. The next play, the very next play. So Decker gets beat on the outside. And again, Micah does this crazy move where it looks maybe like it's going to go in. I thought he was going in and then he's around and out. The very next play does something similar, gets him on the inside, nukes him right on the inside. Decker's just like at a loss. He has no idea what to do. Now on that play, he got to Goff in like 1.5 seconds. And it just so happened that Goff got the ball out in about 1.4 seconds to his running back out in the flat. But he just nuked one of the better left tackles in football twice in a row. He was good against the run. He had one play where I probably could have set the edge better against Jahmyr Gibbs. But my goodness, I still can't believe. Hey, good win for Dallas. You know, Quinnen Williams looks good for them. Jadeveon Clowney, I think, had a sack today. Obviously, they still got Kenny Clark out of that deal as well. They still have some picks left. Maybe that'll end up working out for Dallas somehow, some way too. But I just can't wrap my head around letting that guy go ever, no matter what. You keep that guy no matter what. And I'll say this again. I've talked to people. By all accounts, he, as good as he is on the field, he is as good or better within the building so far. So yeah, what a performance from Micah Parsons. Again, 38.5% pressure rate. It's just absurd. Just absurd. All right, number three, how about Dontavian freaking Wicks? 6 for 94, 2 touchdowns, and so many key plays. Obviously, the 2 touchdowns were key plays, including, you know, one that was on fourth down, the huge catch. And by the way, I don't know if I'm taking crazy pills here. I get that, you know, people can see things through their own team's glasses sometimes. That's the most obvious, not the most obvious. Okay, let me rephrase that. That is a very clear and obvious catch by Dontavian Wicks. And Lions fans are freaking out. Like, this is some crime against humanity that they called it a catch. It was very clearly a catch. He had the ball with his right foot down, got his left foot down, maintained control throughout the entirety of it. It's as clear as day of a catch as you could possibly have. It's just a catch. I don't know. I feel like when I'm seeing some of these tweets of like, oh, it's clearly not a catch, I feel like I'm taking crazy. Like it's a catch. The NFL has screwed up their catch rules so many times where sometimes it's hard to define what a catch was. That's a catch. It's a catch all day, every day. But back to Wicks. He has that one. He's got the great ball up the seam. He's obviously got the game ender at the end. He also has another key third down where Jordan did have the crazy eyes right after that play. What a ball that was by Jordan too. But that's a key third down conversion. It was just big play after big play after big play for somebody who's been a little bit more quiet this season. There's obviously a lot of mouths to feed within the offense. They needed him in this game. They needed him to step up big. He did. And I can't say enough about that catch at the end too. He loses his shoe. He goes up and gets it. That is a massively tough catch in that scenario. His move off the line was really good. And then Branch still had him. I mean, Branch had as good a coverage as you could get. That's plus coverage from Branch. And Love puts it up, high points it, or to a place where Wicks can high point it. Wicks does exactly that. Vice grips it, doesn't let it hit the ground. The only thing that dropped was his shoe. Big time stuff. Big time stuff from Dontavian Wicks. And hopefully that's a sign of things to come for him, because they're going to need more of that. But that was a big time clutch performance from him as well. How about Jahmyr Gibbs and Green Bay's ability to stop him? Now, he had 87 yards on the ground. Well, sorry, let me rephrase that. Against the Packers in the two games so far, he has 87 yards on the ground on 29 carries. That is a 3.0 yards per attempt or yards per carry with no touchdowns. So 29 for 87, 3 yards per carry, no touchdowns in his two games against Green Bay so far. He has 13 catches for 49 yards, a 3.8 yards per catch, and no touchdowns receiving against Green Bay so far. To put that in perspective for you, against the rest of the NFL, he has 146 carries, 932 yards, a 6.4 yard average on the ground with 10 touchdowns. In the two games against Green Bay, 3.0 yard average, no touchdowns. He is less than half of his usual yards per attempt against Green Bay. 6.4 against everyone else, 3.0 against Green Bay. That's an absurd number. And then through the air against the rest of the NFL, 38 catches, 348 yards, 9.2 yards per catch, and 3 touchdowns. Again, against Green Bay, 3.8 yards per catch, almost like a third with no touchdowns. They have done a tremendous job in two games against one of the most explosive running backs in the league. I even tweeted out, like, I am terrified every time Jahmyr Gibbs touches the ball. Even though they were doing such a great job on him, I was terrified every time he touched it. It wasn't quite maybe to the level of like Adrian Peterson or Barry Sanders, but it was right there. It was maybe just one tier below it. It was scary because he's that talented. Like, he could take it at any given moment. And Green Bay bottled him in for the second consecutive time, you know, going against Detroit this year, that they just held him completely in check. And really a huge, huge reason why Green Bay was able to get out of that game. So great job by the run defense. Great job by Jeff Hafley for having a plan in place for how to contain him. And they did. They executed on it. A couple plays again where I thought he got to the edges, you know, one on Micah, one on Rashawn Gary, that I thought could have been a little bit better. But you're not complaining about anything when you hold Jahmyr Gibbs that in check in any given game. We'll be right back. Today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. Now, the weather might be changing, but the feeling of being right never gets old. So keep the season rolling on Prize Picks by getting $50 in lineups instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. Now it's time to start getting ready for week 13 as Green Bay tries to sweep the series with Detroit. This needs to be a big win for Green Bay, but I'm going to take both Christian Watson and Amon-Ra St. Brown to have big games in this one. Elsewhere in week 13, I'm going with a huge bounce back from Josh Allen, a strong performance from Justin Herbert, and a breakout from Cortland Sutton. Here's the best part. Prize Picks is super simple. Just pick more or less than at least two player stats. If you get your picks right, you can cash in. And even better, how you play is completely up to you. If you want flexibility, choose Flex Play, where you can get paid even if one of your picks misses. And if you want the biggest payouts, go for the power play. No matter how you play, Prize Picks is a great way to put your takes to the test. So what are you waiting for? Download the Prize Picks app today using code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. And don't forget that code PACKADAY. Prize Picks. It's good to be right. That's number four. Number five. Fourth down. Fourth down's the difference in this game. Here were the stats in totality for this game for Green Bay and Detroit. Total plays in this game. Green Bay had 60. Detroit had 60. Total yards in this game. Green Bay had 359. Detroit had 352. A difference of 7 yards. Passing yardage. Green Bay had 234 yards passing. The Lions had 233 yards passing. A 1 yard difference. Rushing yardage. The Packers had 125 yards on the ground. The Lions had 119 yards on the ground. 6 yards difference. Penalty yards. The Packers had 20 penalty yards. The Lions had 22 penalty yards. A difference of 2 yards. Turnovers. The Packers had no turnovers. The Lions had no turnovers. The difference in this game, simply put, bar none, end of story, was fourth down. The Packers were 3 for 3 on fourth down with 2 touchdowns and a game-sealing play, and the Lions were 0 for 2 on fourth down with 2 turnover on downs. That's it. That's your difference. That's the complete 100% difference in this game. When you say a razor-thin margin, same amount of plays, 7 yards difference, 1 passing yard difference, 6 rushing yard different, difference, 2 penalty yard difference, no turnover difference. It literally just comes down to fourth down conversions. And this is, by the way, why when I say it's not a philosophical thing, it's an execution thing. Dan Campbell was aggressive in this game too. He went for it on 2 fourth downs. He failed both times. Dan Campbell, oh, was he too aggressive? Should he have done it? It works when it works. You look great when it works. Today, Matt LaFleur goes for it on 4th down 3 times. It works 3 times. He looks like a genius. Dan Campbell looks like an idiot. When your players execute out for you on the field and convert, it makes you look really smart. Makes you look really good. It's execution-based. But Matt LaFleur played Dan Campbell's game. He stayed aggressive, and the 4th down, you know, differential here, 3 for 3 versus 0 for 2, was what decided the game. It's a massive swing. It's a massive swing in the game. And, you know, if it's the opposite, if Green Bay is 0 for 3 and Detroit's 2 for 2, Detroit wins the game. And if Green Bay doesn't even just get that one at the end, who knows what that is? If Green Bay doesn't get the one, the touchdown to Wicks or the touchdown to Dobbs, who knows what that score is? And if Detroit just picks up one of theirs, who knows what the score is? It's everything in this game. And then number 6, my last key takeaway, is Matt LaFleur. For all the consternation and, you know, wondering if he was going to be able to be aggressive, today he was. And he called a fantastic game. I thought the offense was constantly in positions to be successful. That said, if you look at the amount of contested catches that, you know, Jordan Love had to throw and that the receivers had to catch, the Lions made it hard. This was not exactly a you know, picture-perfect, scheme-it-open sort of game. Detroit challenged everything, and the Packers executed extremely well. But I thought Matt's demeanor, the aggressiveness, going for it on fourth down, all gas, no break, was back. Scared money don't make money was back. And again, that decision at the end, back-to-back third and fourth down plays to put it in Jordan's hands, yes. Just yes. A million times over, yes. Put it in your franchise quarterback's hands and let him make the play to win the game. That was the next step for this team. That's where Matt and this offense had to get to. You're not a great running team. Your offensive line has had its struggles, but guess what? Jordan has been consistently able to make things happen. He did again today, and when it mattered most, he came through in the clutch. I love this mentality from Green Bay. I hope they can continue it. I hope that's how they play. Again, it doesn't necessarily mean success. We saw Detroit have an aggressive mentality these past 2 weeks. It barely worked against the Giants. It didn't work against Green Bay. you got to execute too. But I overall love this mentality. And I thought Matt was fantastic in this particular game. All right. Our Luigi's Pizza player of the game. We went over him already, but it was my player to watch in this game, Jordan Love. Player to watch was Jordan Love. I thought he was going to have a big game to come out with a win. He had that big game. We talked about the four touchdowns and his clutch performance. I've got one more stat for you here. When Jordan Love had a clean pocket in this game, meaning the offensive line protected him, 14 of 17, 190 yards, four touchdowns, and a 152.8 passer rating. 14 of 17, 190 and four touchdowns when they protected him. That's an unbelievable stat. Kudos to Jordan. Protect that man and he's going to do wonders for you. He did again today. And when Green Bay had to have that big performance to keep their NFC North hopes alive and, you know, continue on the path to the playoffs, Jordan came up clutch and is deserving of the player of the game in this one as he got his, you know, his turkey leg at the end and the John Madden MVP trophy of this game. He deserved it. He was awesome. He's the Luigi's Pizza player of the game as well. Unfortunately, not due to our wonderful sponsor, but due to the injury news, let's get to our Habish Rotier injury report. Devontae Wyatt goes out for the game. The report from Tom Silverstein is that there is ligament damage here as well for Devontae Wyatt, which it would knock him out for the remainder of this year, depending on the severity of the ligament damage. Could, you know, get into next year as well. We'll figure that out in the offseason and beyond. But right now, a brutal loss for this Packers defense. Wyatt's been good. You know, it's unfortunate that he's had to deal with some of these injuries. I thought he started the season off amazing. You can hear Micah Parsons every time he talks about Wyatt, of how thrilled he is to have that guy on the interior. I thought he played a really good game in this one. Had the two sacks a week ago against Minnesota. He is a very, very difficult player to replace. They're going to have to go with a lot of Colby Wooden, Carl Brooks when he's back healthy, Warren Brinson, and Nasir Stackhouse. They've got four remaining defensive tackles left. To me, I think that Wooden, Brooks, and Brinson can get through this. I really do. It's not easy. I don't think it's catastrophic, but that's a big time loss for Green Bay. No two ways around it. I am bullish on the fact that Warren Brinson has played more and more and has held up well these last couple weeks. I'm excited to watch him on the All 22 this week. I thought he had another solid performance, but there's going to be a lot on the plate of Brinson, Wooden, and Brooks. I do think LVN coming back, if and when that happens, hopefully soon, that can really help you on some of those obvious passing down situations where LVN can kick inside. And you've still got, you know, Rashawn Gary and Mike on the outside with an LVN on the inside. And you could go with a Warren Brinson. I mean, you could probably kick Inigbari inside too. Baron Sorrell's done a little bit of that. They'll have some options there. Even Micah can do that as well. But it's a big loss to lose Wyatt. There's no question about it. And hearing ligament damage is really rough as well. It's a brutal injury for him. We'll get the full diagnosis, I'm sure, later this week, but it certainly looks like Devontae Wyatt's going to miss the rest of the season. I will just add on top of this, though. I know it's a devastating injury. Green Bay, theoretically, maybe even a week and a half from now against Chicago, at some point in the next few weeks, I would expect them to get back LVN, Carl Brooks, Quay Walker, Matthew Golden, Jaden Reed, Savion Williams, and Nate Hobbs. All seven of those players were out with injuries. And maybe, I'm not holding my breath a ton, but maybe even a Brenton Cox and a Marshawn Lloyd as well. If I told you that, you know, hey, you won this game against Detroit, one of the best teams on the road in Detroit, and yeah, you're going to lose, you know, Devontae Wyatt from here on out, but you gain back LVN, Carl Brooks, Quay Walker, Matthew Golden, Jaden Reed, Savion Williams, Nate Hobbs, and maybe even Marshawn Lloyd and Brenton Cox. Would you take that trade? I'd say, yeah, you'd take that trade. That's a lot of help to your team. So it sucks to lose Wyatt, but it'll be very helpful to get some of those players back. And what I'll just say on top of that is, like, this is the NFL. You're going to lose some players week to week. You're going to get some guys back who've been hurt earlier in the season. And you just hope that you don't have any, you know, too many devastating long-term injuries. Think where you're a little bit bummed out right now for Green Bay: Elgton Jenkins, Devontae Wyatt, Tucker Kraft, three pretty important players for your team now likely done for the year. We know Kraft is, we know Jenkins is, and if that's what Wyatt is as well, those are three very important players that, again, can you survive without them? Yes, but it certainly makes things a whole hell of a lot tougher. I had people ask me, what are some replacement options? They do have James Ester as their lone defensive tackle on the practice squad. He could be one call-up possibility. Some other names maybe to keep an eye on. The Christian Wilkins conversation I know will continue until we find out more or whatever. All I'll say is this. If Christian Watson was good enough to play right now, he would be on one of the 32 teams. And he's not. Which tells me either A, he's still hurt, or B, there are some character concerns that teams don't want to touch right now, or C, both. But if he was good enough, or if the injury was healed or whatever it was, he would be on a team. So I have to think that he probably is not an option. Some names that might be Maurice Hurst, the former Raider, Brown, etc. He is out there. A couple of years ago, he had a really nice season for Cleveland. Last year, his season was riddled with injuries, which really kind of put him back. Like, they were expecting a big year out of him last year, and then injuries derailed it. And he hasn't really gotten a chance this year with any team. He got a workout with Indianapolis a couple weeks ago. He could be a player to keep an eye on. He's kind of in that similar vein of a Devontae Wyatt, probably similar pass rusher. Clearly not as good as anything as Wyatt. Let me be very clear at this stage of his career. But in general, kind of like a similar pass rusher, just probably not quite as good of a run defender at this point. But that's one name. Montrevious Adams, the former Packer, actually put together a pretty solid career post-Green Bay, mostly in Pittsburgh. He's still out there. That could be a name to keep an eye on. We talked about James Ester off the practice squad. One more name I'll give you, and probably the direction I would go in personally. Evan Anderson, a little bit more of like a nose tackle type, or at least a more of a run stuffing type, but he's a talented defensive tackle who's on the practice squad for San Francisco. He played a decent amount of snaps for them a year ago, played pretty well. They brought in some defensive tackles in the offseason. He ended up not making the team and then just got on their practice squad. But I think he can play. I actually think he'd be an upgrade from Nasir Stackhouse, if I'm being honest. But that'd be one more name to keep an eye on. But there's no replacing Devontae Wyatt. There's no question about it. But I do think maybe if you can get the most out of Wooden, Brooks, and Brinson, while also getting LVN back, there's a way to counter it in some possible way so that it's not at least catastrophic for them. We'll have to see what they ultimately decide to do at that position, though. All right, we've still got a lot to get into in this one. Let's talk about the offense. The day on offense for Green Bay, field goal, punt, touchdown, touchdown. Then they took the one play and then took the kneel down before halftime. So we'll kind of take that one out. Then touchdown, touchdown, punt. That was predicated on a really bad non-call on a pass interference by, you know, or that was on Christian Watson. And then their final drive, which they milked away the clock and ended the game. So taking away that halftime one in the middle, field goal, punt, touchdown, 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 punt controversially because of the no call, and then sealed away the game at the end. It's a pretty good game, 31 points overall. We talked about Jordan Love, massive performance from him. We talked about Dontavian Wicks, massive performance from him. Anthony Belton not only got the start at right guard, played every snap at right guard. A true benching for Jordan Morgan. Jordan Morgan did not play a single snap in this game. A big change there. It was the right move. I want to watch the All-22 before I go too far into this, but I thought Belton looked better. Some get to the second level on some plays. No major catastrophic issues that I saw. I thought it was a good game from Belton at first glance. I'll want to see what it looks like again on the All-22 before I make too many judgments, but I love the decision. I thought it was the right move. I thought it paid off for him in this one. Meanwhile, Josh Jacobs coming back from injury. Efficient, 17 carries, 83 yards, 4.9 yard average. Not always a ton there, but had a couple explosive runs, which you love to see. And overall, a 4.9 yard average for the day. I thought he ran hard, thought he ran tough behind his pads, got what he could. And again, made a couple big plays as well. Coming off the injury and bouncing back, I thought that was a really good performance overall from the run game and specifically Josh Jacobs. I also thought Green Bay did a phenomenal job of taking Aiden Hutchinson out of the game. He had no sacks, couldn't do anything. Zach Tom did a great job, but I thought the offense had a great game plan for making sure Hutchinson wouldn't beat them. He didn't, and that was a huge reason. The difference we talked about in the pregame show, Aiden Hutchinson versus Micah, who can make the bigger impact? Hutchinson had almost none. Micah was all over the place at all times, everywhere, all at once. That's another key difference in this game. Meanwhile, the Lions did not have a single sack on defense. Advantage Green Bay there as well. I also want to shout out Green Bay. I thought from the very first drive in the game, that crowd for Detroit was going insane, and they handled the crowd noise all game long. The silent count was better. They were able to even get, you know, some hard count at times. They got a free play on one. I just thought for a very tough environment to play in, I thought they handled the I don't want to say conditions, but the sound and the road environment incredibly, incredibly well. So kudos to Green Bay for that. We do need to talk at least a little bit about the false start by Belton into the timeout. Matt basically, you know, gave it away at the end with the big wink of he knows he didn't get that timeout off in time. I don't know how the NFL officiating gets that wrong. Like the offsides takes place. You can see it. There's flags going up and then Matt's calling timeout. I don't know how that got by. I'll take it. It's a 4-point swing in the game. But, you know, we talked, I thought the catch along the sideline by Wicks was clean. I thought that was the right call. This one they got wrong. They got the pass interference. We'll talk about the legal contact on Keyshawn Nixon as well. But that Green Bay got a gift on that one. I don't know how much it would have changed the outcome one way or the other, but that's an extra 4 points for Green Bay there on a granted timeout that really looked like it should not have been granted. I think Matt knows too that one should not have been granted. I'll take it. Green Bay's not always the one that gets the advantage of some of those. They did certainly in this one. The Christian Watson pass interference, though. Now we go back the other way. The shot from the cameraman of the referee looking right at the play and not calling that is so far beyond absurd. His hand is so clearly getting grabbed when you're, and he has to go up one-handed with it. And when you see that he's trying to go up for one-handed, you look, I can't believe that's not called. I just cannot believe in an NFL game like that with that much importance that you can't call that play. That's just very poor officiating. It's frustrating. It could have easily changed the outcome of the game. I'm not one to, you know, go over the officiating in too great a detail. It is what it is. Sometimes you catch a break like you did on the false start timeout situation. Sometimes the one goes against you like in this situation. But man, you just wish this stuff, when it's very clear and obvious, would get called the right way on both sides. On both sides, the timeout offside, you know, false start one, and the play to Christian Watson. Just disappointing to see those not get called. Speaking of Christian Watson, beautiful play on the deep throw down the field. I thought he got, you know, just enough of the defender where it was enough to gain separation, but not draw an offensive pass interference penalty. And again, one of the most, you know, gorgeous balls of the year from Jordan Love with that beautiful high arcing deep ball down the field, perfectly landing in the hands of Christian Watson. We need to shout out our good friend Rashid Walker as well. Another game changing moment. His fumble recovery on the fumble by Romeo Doubs. Doubs had the touchdown, but he also had that free play down the field where he like didn't jump on the play. And then he has a fumble in a, you know, red zone situation. Rashid Walker saved Romeo Doubs' bacon and maybe Green Bay's bacon in that game. That's another one where margins are razor thin. You're taking a touchdown off the board there. Who knows how much that would have mattered. But a big time fumble recovery for Rashid Walker. Then shout out Luke Musgrave on a very difficult catch. We talked about the last couple of weeks. You want to get him up the seam and you want to get him on deep over routes and crossers. That was a deep crosser. They did a great job of, you know, Jordan dropping back, seeing it, ripping it, and then Musgrave with the fantastic diving catch. That's where you want to see him succeed. He did on that particular play. Kudos to him. Overall, solid day, better than solid. Really good day for the offense. Again, putting up 31 points and winning the game. Love that for the offense. Love it for Jordan. Love how they played overall. Defensively, here was the day for the defense. Punt, punt, touchdown, touchdown, turnover on downs, touchdown, turnover on downs, field goal. Just one more time. Punt, punt, touchdown, touchdown, turnover on downs, touchdown, turnover on downs, and then field goal. Some ups and some downs for the defense for sure. Good start, bad middle. Held them to a field goal at the end, which I thought was really important. We talked about Micah Parsons in his epic game. We talked about Jahmyr Gibbs and limiting him. The one player that was disappointing that Green Bay couldn't keep a little bit more in check was Jameson Williams. 7 catches for 144 yards and a touchdown, over 20 yards per catch. Listen, there's no Laporta, right? Amon-Ra St. Brown goes down very early in the game. There's two players left, Jahmyr Gibbs and Jameson Williams. You can't let Jahmyr Gibbs run all over you, which they did a great job of, and you can't let Jameson Williams beat you with any level of consistency in the passing game. And unfortunately, they kind of let Williams keep going. Thankfully, Williams had that key drop on fourth down, which was also a huge, huge, you know, game changer in that game. But that's one where the defense needs to be a little bit more in tune. You can't let their one remaining playmaker from a receiving standpoint go 7 for 144 and a touchdown. That was a little bit disappointing. Thought Kingsley Enagbare quietly had a really nice game, had the nice play on the end around that got completely blown up, had a half sack, had another play that was involved in a big-time play for the defense. I thought Enagbare played well. I thought he had more impact plays than Rashawn Gary. We'll see how that grades out through the course of the week, but felt like he had more impact plays than Rashawn Gary did. The Carrington Valentine missed tackle is a brutal play. It emphasizes the importance of wrapping up. You can't just hit a dude in the NFL. They're going to break that tackle. It's a great read by Valentine. He's in the right spot, right time, right moment. He's right there. Just has to make the play. That's probably a 4-point swing in the game as well. He gets him down there. I like Green Bay's chances of getting off the field and holding him to a field goal attempt. Instead, it's an easy touchdown for Jameson Williams, and the Lions were right back in the game on that play. Got to be better in tackling for Carrington Valentine. The other play that I thought Green Bay really would like to have back was on their first touchdown drive, where it was like a 3rd and 15, something like that. They hit Tom Kennedy up the seam for about 23 yards. That's a play where I thought Jeff got a little bit too cute, trying to disguise some stuff. And rather than just playing the play, letting your defense get there up front and making sure that you're sound in coverage, the disguise stuff has worked really well for them. So I don't want to be too harsh on it. But in that particular situation, I thought they might have been a little bit better off just playing things a little bit more straight up, not having maybe the confusion on the back end, while meanwhile letting your defensive front and specifically Micah Parsons get there. Instead, got, again, maybe a little bit too cute in a 23-yard pickup. That eventually led to a touchdown on that drive. Again, some things that I think the defense can still clean up coming out of this one. I would still say 24 points to the Lions is a solid effort. Could have been better, could have been worse, but 24 points is a winnable performance against this Lions team. But no Amon-Ra St. Brown, no Sam Laporta. You would have maybe liked it to see it just a little bit better. I thought there was still some meat on the bone out there for the defense. Losing Wyatt really hurts, no question about it. That's going to be a big loss for the defense. The last thing I want to talk about defensively, we saw the pass interference no call with Watson. Then on the next drive, they call that illegal contact on Keyshawn Nixon. I don't know how smart referees are with this stuff, right? That's a tight end that's on the outside with Keyshawn Nixon in coverage. That's in the tight end's just going deep as a pure dummy route on that play. The tight end has no intentions of trying to get open or make a play. He's just literally going on a dummy route run. You're just occupying a corner and letting somebody else go make the play somewhere else on the field. There's never going to be a play where that tight end is involved really, you know, from a reception standpoint. Not to mention that, yes, the contact took place down the field. You just, in that situation, that you have to let that go. You have to let that go. By the letter of the law, is it illegal contact? Sure. But like it meant nothing. It didn't impede the progress. He's not an intended target anyway. And maybe there's an onus on Keyshawn Nixon there to know, hey, that's a dummy route. Just don't even touch him. You don't need to. They're not going to throw his way anyway. But I would like to see the ref have some common sense there and say there was clearly never going to be a play there. We don't need to make the stupid, in my opinion, illegal contact penalty, especially after missing one, which was a clear pass interference a drive earlier, but was what it was. Green Bay, thankfully, was able to overcome it. Special teams, I don't have a ton of notes here. This is going to sound a little bit nitpicky, but I think it's important. Green Bay started on their own, not including turnover on downs plays, which had nothing to do with special teams. Green Bay started on their own 17-17, 23-30, 26-28, and 35, an average start at their own 25-yard line. Meanwhile, Detroit started at their own 35, 37, 35, 35, 34, 29, 26, and 20. It got a little bit better at the end of the game, but their average start position was their own 31-yard line. That's a 6-yard difference. Now, you might be thinking, Andy, in a game like this, you're going to talk about a 6-yard difference in where they get the... Absolutely. Because if you look at the, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 returns for Detroit, the 6 for Green Bay, or the, you know, the starting field position, you're talking about a hit in about 45 to 50 yards in favor of Detroit based on that starting field position. 45 to 50 yards in a game where you have about 300 yards of total offense. Add 50 on top of that now. That's a huge difference. So I thought that the coverage units and Brandon McManus consistently kicking it in the end zone and Green Bay not having a great return game in this one, I thought it was caught. Thankfully, it didn't cost them in the end, but that's a pretty brutal effort by the special teams. They've got to be better. And like I said, that might be a hidden 50 yards that you didn't even know existed that was lost by the special teams in that game. Has to be better. Thankfully, McManus made his kicks. There was nothing catastrophic. You did allow a 21-yard punt return, but it was on a kick that probably outkicked the coverage a little bit. And then I would still say at the end of the day, though, for the special teams, more bad than good, but I'm just happy there was no major brutal play for Green Bay, but that starting field position is a real thing. We'll be right back. I'm not sure about you guys, but it's a season for hosting a lot of holiday dinners, get-togethers, and big events, and all of that planning, cooking, and shopping can take a huge extra toll on my stress levels when there's already so much going on. That's why I leave the stress behind and rely on Omaha Steaks to help me prepare amazing meals for all of my family and friends this holiday season. And not to spoil some gifts for family members who may be listening, but I've definitely been picking up some Omaha Steaks as gifts, which makes holiday shopping super simple as well. The best part is that you can benefit with their Sizzle All The Way sale, which you can get 50% off. Yes, 50% off site-wide at omahasteaks.com. Plus, listeners get an extra $35 off with promo code PACKADAY at checkout. I'm actually hosting a birthday get-together this week, and the freezer is stocked with amazing steaks and burgers from Omaha, which is making things super simple to prepare and plan for. And if you haven't tried the food yet, it's beyond incredible. I can't recommend it enough. I especially want to shout out their grass-fed, grain-finished beef that has more marbling for exceptional flavor. Now, Omaha Steaks is a family-owned company with over 100 years of expertise in the meat industry. So don't miss out on this deal and save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their Sizzle All The Way sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code PACKADAY at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com with code PACKADAY. All right, so it's 2025, and we're all pretty up-to-date on the insane amount of scam emails and texts that we're getting at this point. But if I can be real for a moment, I recently got an email. I won't go into detail on the company or what it was, but this thing was so insanely real. I still had doubts. Double-checked the sender, the link, everything about it looked authentic, but it wasn't. Thankfully, my browser saved me in that situation, but even when we're on high alert, just one small mistake could be the difference in getting scammed financially. Here's the thing. Scammers know the holidays are the busiest time for everyone, which can make us all targets for scams. That's why Cash App builds in protection to help keep your money safe while you're checking off your shopping list. If you're about to send money to someone for a deal that's too good to be true, and Cash App flags it as a potential scam, they'll warn you before you send the money. Cash App also gives you an extra layer of protection with features like Security Lock. You can require a PIN, Face ID, or fingerprint to unlock your account and move money, so even if someone gets a hold of your unlocked phone at a holiday party, your money is right where you left it. So gift yourself some peace of mind this holiday season and download Cash App. For a limited time only, new Cash App customers can use our exclusive code to earn some additional cash. For real, just download Cash App, use our exclusive referral code SECURE10 in your profile, send $5 to a friend within 14 days, and you'll get $10 dropped right into your account. Terms apply. That's money. That's Cash App. Cash App is a financial services platform, not a bank. Banking services provided by Cash App's bank partners. Prepaid debit cards issued by Sutton Bank, member FDIC. Promotions provided by Cash App, a Block Incorporated brand. Visit cash.app/legal/podcast for full disclosures. Some miscellaneous notes. LVN, Carl Brooks, Savion Williams, Quay Walker, Matthew Golden, Nate Hobbs, and Donovan Jennings were your inactives for this game. Donovan Jennings, the only healthy inactive. Some snap count stuff from the one and only Justice Mosqueda of Acme Packing Company. Carl Brooks played 17 snaps. Emmanuel Wilson played 11. So Brooks outsnapped Wilson in this one by about 6 snaps. Bo Melton played 11 snaps at receiver. Heath only played 10. I understand it. I actually think Heath's a little bit better receiver at this point in time. Musgrave took over the number one tight end role with 38 snaps. Wiley was number two with 30. And Fitzpatrick took a huge jump down this week to only 14 snaps, the same as Darian Kennard had as that number six offensive lineman, kind of playing as a pseudo blocking tight end. Belton, as mentioned, played every snap. Jordan Morgan did not play a snap. Christian Welch took one snap with the nickel. That was a little bit of an interesting choice to play him. I would have thought it would have been McDuffie and Hopper in that situation, but they went with McDuffie and Welch on an obvious passing down. There are three new Packers. Will Shepard, who they signed to the 53, and then Jalen Simpson and Jamon Johnson, who they called up to the active game day roster. Jalen Simpson and Will Shepard did not play a single snap per Justice Mosqueda on special teams or on offense or defense, respectively, in this game. Jamon Johnson did not play a snap on defense, but did play 11 special team snaps in this game. So of those three, it was only Jamon Johnson playing 11 special team snaps. Meanwhile, some other interesting statistics. The Packers are now 7-0 this season when not committing a turnover in the game. 7-0 when not committing a turnover. That's a pretty crazy stat. Per Dari Carriger, Jordan Love in his last 10 indoor games. So last 10 indoor games, 21 touchdowns, one interception. 21 touchdowns, one interception, 240 yards per game, 116.7 passer rating, and a PFF grade of 91.8 in his last 10 indoor games combined. That is a crazy, crazy set of statistics for Jordan Love. Meanwhile, three Jordan Love games on Thanksgiving. He is 61 of 90, 776 yards, nine touchdowns, no picks. And he's been the MVP in all three of the three Thanksgiving games that he has been in. Epic numbers there for Jordan Love. And last but not least, Jordan Love against the Lions so far this season in those two games, 34 of 52, 422 yards, six touchdowns, no picks, a 128.4 passer rating, and he has not taken a sack in either game. Some fun, fun Jordan Love numbers there for you. I talked about the coaching. I thought Matt LaFleur was really good. I loved his aggression and the way he played the end of the game. I thought it was more of a mixed bag from Jeff Hafley. Not bad, not great. I thought overall a winning performance. If Carrington Valentine makes that play, it probably looks a lot different, but mostly good, but maybe again, a little bit more up and down. And then Bisaccia, nothing brutal, but still overall, I would say a tough performance for the special teams. Where Green Bay stands. As mentioned, they are still the sixth seed right now. They're 8-3-1. The Bears are 8-3. They would move to the number three spot with an Eagles win over the Bears today on Black Friday football. The Packers would stay at the number six seed with a Bears loss to Philadelphia. They are now 1.5 games ahead of Detroit for the final playoff spot. And that's a good place to be in. You don't want to be in that spot. You don't want to be on the outside looking in. And thankfully, they now have a 1.5 game lead over Detroit, which again is currently that number eight seed. Green Bay's remaining schedule, Chicago at home, at Denver, at Chicago, Ravens at home, at Vikings. They're going to be a very difficult stretch of four games coming up. Bears are going to be hungry. Broncos on the road is going to be tough. Ravens are probably in a must-win situation. Those are four good teams that they're going to have to find a way to get wins against. We've got Packers-Bears coming up this week. We're going to remember those comments by Ben Johnson saying he really enjoys beating Matt LaFleur twice per year. I think Matt might have this one circled a little bit against Ben Johnson. We'll see. But hopefully Matt's got his A-plus stuff and can come away with a win against the Ben Johnson-led Chicago Bears. Obviously, a huge game today. Bears-Eagles on Black Friday. Keep an extra eye on that one. How many snaps do the Bears play? Do they have any key injuries? What does that look like? Of course, the game is in Green Bay next week, so that's going to help Green Bay. The Bears are coming off four straight wins pending what happens against the Eagles. So either five straight wins or they're going to get their first loss in their last five games. Meanwhile, the Packers are 73% odds to win the NFC North. The Bears are 16%. The odds are that the team that wins the North is probably one of these two. A ton on the line in the next 3 weeks with these two games, Packers and Bears. As mentioned, worth keeping an eye on this game. Green Bay only will have one day of rest advantage. So despite the fact that they are playing on Thursday, they usually get the rest advantage against the opposing team. They still do, but it's only by one day because the Bears play here on Friday as well. Speaking of those playoff odds, per the New York Times playoff simulator, the Packers have a 93% chance to make the playoffs. That jumps to 97% with a win over the Bears. It drops to 80% with a loss to the Bears. has mentioned, Green Bay is a 73% chance to win the division after that huge win against Detroit. That jumps to 82% with a win over Chicago, drops to 43% with a loss to Chicago. So again, that's a huge swing in the division one way or the other. They unfortunately only have a 6% chance at the number one seed and getting that first round bye. That jumps to a massive 7% chance with a win over the Bears, but it goes to less than 1% chance with a loss against the Bears. I've got some simple playoff math for you. There are 5 games left in Green Bay season. With 3 wins in their next 5 games, so 3 of 5, they have a greater than 99% chance to make the playoffs, regardless of who those 3 wins are against. So you win 3 of your next 5, go 3-2 the remainder of the season, you are greater than a 99% chance to make the playoffs. Win 3, go to the playoffs. With four wins, they are a greater than 99% chance to win the NFC North, unless one of those losses is to the Chicago Bears, in which case they would only be a 98% chance to win the division. Simply put, win 3 games, get in the playoffs. Win 4 games, win the NFC North. Win 5 games with a little bit of help, you'll have a shot, at least a shot, at getting the number one overall seed and a first round bye. That's where Green Bay is looking at right now. The Packers are currently tied for 4th in the odds to win the Super Bowl. Only the Rams, Eagles, and Colts are ahead of them. They are currently tied with the Seahawks. That is up from tied for 11th from a week ago. So a big jump for Green Bay there. What to watch for the remainder of this week? Eagles over Bears is an interesting one. If you think Green Bay is going to take care of business on their own, then you actually kind of want Chicago to win, because Philly losing helps you with your chances of getting the number one or two seed and moving up in the seeding process. If you're just saying, hey, I want to win the division, get that home game for sure, better chance to make the playoffs, then you're Eagles over Bears in this one. So just kind of depends. Eye of the beholder, maybe a little bit there. Either way, there's an advantage and a disadvantage. You don't really want either of these teams to get a win. It's probably better, in my opinion, for the Bears to get the loss. But if you take care of things with the Bears in the rest of the season, then the Eagles losing and trying to get that number one seed or maybe even number two could actually end up being better for Green Bay. You're going to be cheering for the Vikings over the Seahawks, or at least just cheering for the Seahawks to fail on Sunday. You want the Panthers over the Rams. Again, that could help with the potential number one seed. And then Browns over 49ers, which could help with some playoff odds as well. So we're cheering Eagles or Bears, again, eye of the beholder, but Vikings, Panthers, and Browns are the 3 teams you're cheering for coming up on Sunday. My final thoughts on this one, a huge day for Green Bay, an epic win in a playoff type atmosphere. I am still on a high. I'm still geeking out over this game. I thought the big time players came up huge. Micah Parsons, Jordan Love, when they had to have it, they came up clutch. That's what you love to see, players going out and winning games. And I thought they both had big time winning performances, as did, as we talked about, Dontavian Wicks. And I'll just say it one more time. I thought this was really, truly a must win for Green Bay. They have to win the North if they want a shot at this thing. I don't think that they can go on a 3-game road trip in the playoffs to get to the Super Bowl. I just think it's too daunting in the NFC. In the AFC, maybe, but in the NFC, I don't think it's possible. I think that was a big time clutch win for Green Bay. They had to have it. They went and got it, and give everyone their flowers for picking up a very impressive and epic win over the Detroit Lions to go again to 3-0 in the NFC North on the season. That's going to do it for me today. Thank you for joining me. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Wong, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gasford, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Carlo Delgado, Willie Winkelsinkle, The Gable Storm, Pack Attack Cast, Chris Weish, Craig, John D. Metropolis, Hayden Radomski, Devin Lane, Gons USA, Alexander Newell, Dan Miller, Bill Reinhart, Richard Morales, Les Nino, Beast Bumblebee, and Benjamin Sargent. I'll see you guys all very, very soon. Enjoy your Friday, everyone. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.